So we're on Daf Chav Dalet Amid Beis. So yesterday we started the sugya of Rabbi Yochanan. Let's go over what we did yesterday, and we're counting down from the top of Chav Dalet Amid Beis, 10 lines down. Om Rabbi Yavo, Om Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Isurim Shabbat Torah, Ein Lokin Aleim El Derech Achi Loson. So you don't get malchus for violating an isur Torah unless you do it kederech achilos, and you eat it in the normal way it's eaten. In other words, when the Torah says don't eat something, lo tochlu, says Rabbi Yochanan, the intention of the Torah is to prohibit the derech regila, the normal way of eating something. If you eat something in an unusual way, then you're not chayv malchus.
Shinui.
Ivy?
Shinui. No, same.
You want to call it shinui? Okay.
But isn't the same concept that you're
doing? Yes and no. I'll tell you why. Because shinui is only something that applies to Melech Shabbos. No. Okay. It's not a universal halacha. In Shabbos, the Torah wants Melech Machshavos, meaning it has to be a professional way, you know, an exact way that it's done. I can show you two things, they look identical, and I'll tell you, for this one you're chayim on Shabbos, for this one you're not. Because this one was done in an unusual way. In Kol HaTorah Kula, you would be chayim, despite that change. So let's say, for example, in Levishas Kelayim, I don't care if you put the beged on this way or that way, you know, you turn it inside out, upside down, if you're wearing Kelayim, you're chayim. In most Isurim, Shinui would not make any difference. The exception to the rule is Shabbos. Shabbos requires what's called Meleches Machshavos. Here, in Macholas Asuros, when the Torah prohibits Achila, and we're going to see cases where the Torah didn't even bother prohibiting Achila, but we derive Achila from something else. Like, for example, in Bas Macholas, the Torah doesn't even mention the word Achila. It says, Lo Savashal Gidi, you're not allowed to cook. And then the halacha is going to be totally different. You will see a case of kelaya kerem. Also, the Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to eat kelaya kerem. It doesn't say achila. But whenever the Torah says achila, then there's a halachic legal definition of what achila is, and the precondition for achila is kiderech regila, the way the people would enjoy it. Now, I want to add something here in the name of Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman. He was one of the Kedoshim. Anyway, he writes that Kol Dinei HaTorah, he says, in general, when the Torah approaches something, we have to always understand, is it got to be the Derech Regila, you have to do it the normal way, or not? When the Torah prohibits Achila, however, there's for sure a requirement that it's got to be kederech haregila, lo asra Torah el achila kedarka. And this is going to be very relevant to us as we go along, that lo asra Torah el achila kedarka, which seems to imply that Rabbi Yochanan is not just alleviating malchus, but he's defining achila. And therefore, on a Torah level, you'd be allowed to eat something that's prohibited if it's shalom kederech haregila. We'll come back to clarify that as we go along. Now, the next line in the Gemara.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, please.
Making a bracha on the food has nothing to do with derech achila. Not making a bracha.
Interesting. I would say that in brachos, there are two categories of brachos in Birchas Hanen. There's a bracha on the Maisa, and there's a bracha on the Hanna. The difference is that a bracha on the Maisa relates to that object, and the bracha has to mention the name of the object. For example, Borei Pri HaAdama, Borei Pri HaEitz, Borei Pri HaGofen, etc. Then there's a different category of bracha. That's not on the maisa and the chefer. It's on the hanah that you receive from it. That's called shahakol niya bidvara. So if you were to ask me, what would be the deal with hanah shalo kedarka? Would I make a bracha or not? Let's say, for example, most people would eat a potato cooked, and I want to eat a potato raw. Okay, that's not a good example because that might be a mazik, which means it's harmful. But let's say there was a case where most people would eat something, and we're going to talk about chalev, that normally you cook chalev. But again, you wouldn't make a bracha on chalev, but I'm saying if you had something, shuman, let's say, that most people would eat cooked, and he decides to eat it raw. I know people, maybe you know people, maybe some of us here in the room, would eat a lemon, a raw lemon, without even squeezing its juice.
Sometimes.
Yeah, it's probably healthy, by the way, but it's very bitter. You have to develop a taste for that. So in such a case, since you can't make a bracha on that maisa because it's shalom kedarka, you wouldn't make a bar priya eitz, you would make a shahakal. So the Gemara has a whole slew of cases of vegetables that are normally eaten cooked, and you eat it raw, and you make a shahakla, you don't make a bar priya dom. And the difference is, again, we're really going way off on a tangent here, but just to keep you a little bit posted on Birchas HaNenim, which is a subject that they're learning here in the Kollel, there's a difference between a bracha misuyemes. Bracha misuyemes means where you mention the name or the category of the species of the object, like borei pri ha'adom, etc., and a shahakal. A borei pri adoma is a bracha that relates to this chefetz, the way I normally eat that chefetz. Once I get benefit from it in an abnormal way, then the bracha falls into some sort of general pot, which is called shahakal liya bidvaro, which means I'm thanking Hashem for the handoah.
What if you drink that intravenously?
That would not require bracha at all. Because that's not an achila. No, it's here we're talking about an achila, but shalom kedarka. If it's not an achila at all, meaning it doesn't go down your mouth, then you don't make a bracha. Neither a bracha lefaneha, nor a bracha lachreha. And that's a big chiddush, because the bracha lefaneha is on the achila. The bracha lachreha is on the satiation. Now, a person who gets fed intravenously presumably could be absolutely satiated by it, and yet he doesn't make a bracha lachreh. Why? Because before the pasuk v'savata comes what?
V'achalta.
So the two conditions for a bracha lachreh, you need v'achalta and then v'savata.
A feeding tube
or any of the like might be v'savata, but it's not v'achalta, and therefore there's no bracha lachreh.
These are foods that are not prohibited. What about a food that is prohibited?
That's our sugya.
Right, so that
In a food that's prohibited, if you do it in an unusual way.
So, in an unusual way, without making a bracha, you usually make a bracha on a food. So, you just.
Well, I'm not sure. You might make the thing is like this, Reuven. We don't make a bracha on a prohibited food. I'm oversimplifying a very complicated sugya. There's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid. If a person eats a forbidden food, does he make a bracha on it? We have a principle called Ein Zeh Berech El Minayitz. It's almost as if he insults God when he thanks him for eating a forbidden food. So our sugya, you know, if you had a guy who's wearing a yarmulke and he's making a bracha and he's eating chalev, you know, this guy should be sent to the apikoros bin, if you know what I'm saying. So we don't make brachas on machalas tzus. If you had a guy who's eating machalas tzus and making a bracha, check him out. You know, there's something very odd about him.
Unless we need to find out if it's a medicinal or...
David, did you want to say something? Okay, so let's again, we didn't even get started here, mostly, so let's see if we can get started, okay? So again, Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Yisurin Shabbat Torah, Ein Lokin Aleim El Kederach Achilosa. Fine. Now, we have now a Shakal of Itaria in the Gemara here, which is a little bit ambiguous. What do I mean? It says, Limute Mai. Lemute Mai sounds like the Gemara is asking for an example. In other words, demonstrate this for me. You've given me an abstract principle, reduce it to something tangible. Give me an actual case which would come under the principle of Rabbi Yochanan. In other words, what would constitute, according to Rabbi Yochanan's definition, an achila shelo kedarka that would be excluded from malchus? So the Gemara now, Limute Mai, is not asking a question in the classic objection sense. The Gemara is not objecting to Rabbi Yochanan. It's not a kash on Rabbi Yochanan, but rather it's a clarification of Rabbi Yochanan. Does everybody agree with that at this point? Because very often when you see in the Gemara Limute Mai, the Gemara is about to attack you. And the Gemara is going to say, well, you're excluding this case, I'm going to ask you a question, I'm going to raise an objection. This is the exception to the rule. This is not a limute mai that paves the way for a question or an objection, but rather this is a very naive limute mai. Clarify this. Give me an actual example of what Rabbi Yochanan had in mind. When would we apply the principle of Rabbi Yochanan of an achila shelo kederech achilasa? This is what you call not a kusha, but a birur. Are you familiar with that word birur? Birur means a clarification. Okay, fine. What is included under Rabbi Yochanan and its achila shelo kederech? So in order to understand the answer of the Gemara, let's just introduce a pasuk in Vayikra Zion. The pasuk says, kol chelev shor v'chesev v'eiz lo tochlu. So we're talking about chelev. Chelev is, as we discussed last time, is something similar to shuman. It's fats of the animal, and it's prohibited. It's not the same as shuman. And it doesn't have any taroves, any mixture of basar, the flesh of the animal. It's something called chelev, which exists on its own, and you can separate it as a whole. In other words, it's a clump, if you know what I'm saying. You know, it's as opposed to shuman. Shuman means where there's fat that's absolutely connected to the flesh of the animal, the basar, and you have to do what's called hafrada. You have to separate the shuman from the basar. Here in the case of chelev, chelev is a kind of a fat around the stomach, around the liver, and so forth, which can be removed as a whole because it exists independent of the basar. It's not ma'ura b'basar. Okay. So this chelev, the Torah says, is prohibited. And again, we're talking about a behema, not a chaya. We discussed that yesterday. I'm not going to go over that again. So Rav Simi Barashi says the following. Limute, when do you not get malchus? When do you not violate the full-fledged violation of the Torah of Achila according to Rabbi Yochanan? Im achal chelev chai is potter. Instead of eating cooked chelev, he ate raw chelev. That's not the way people use and eat chelev. That's not the normal way that you eat chelev. So again, the chelev is called chelev chai. And if a person eats chelev chai, that's called achila shelo kedarka. Now, yeah, go ahead, David.
If a food is prohibited, how can there be a normal way to eat it? If it's usher to eat it at all.
A non-Jew is allowed to eat it.
That's true.
So you look at a non-Jew and you see, what does he do with chelev? I don't even know if I have to introduce a non-Jew because we have shuman. Shuman is very similar to chelev, except that shuman is ma'urah b'basar and means hafrada, and it's mutter, but chelev is a separate entity. If you look at shuman, people would first cook the shuman rather than eat it raw. Now, I'm just going to mention here in passing, there's a long footnote here, a discussion about warming up chelev, not cooking it, but making it into a liquid. which is called, again, I don't want to confuse you, I'm just mentioning it in passing for the scholars amongst us who are interested. Not, this is not for our purpose. I'm just mentioning as a footnote, there's something called hemcheu. Hemcheu means he made it into a liquid and he drank it. And the question is, what's the status of heating up chelev, but not cooking it? Like, for example, solar energy. That, you know, you can take chelev and put it in the sun, and if it's a very hot day, again, today is not a very good example, but I'm sure in a few weeks from now you'll know exactly what I mean. And the beating heat of the sun could heat up the chelev, warm it up, to the point that it becomes liquidy, and then he drinks it. So I'm just pointing out there's going to be a whole discussion here in the super commentaries as to whether or not that would be considered kindarko. It wasn't through Bishul, it wasn't Chai, it's somewhere in the middle. It's between Bishul and Chai. Bishul means he put it into a pot and he turned on the fire underneath the pot. That he didn't do. On the other hand, it's not Chai, it's not raw. In its natural state, he heated it up in the heat of the sun, for example, and he made it into a liquid and he drank it. Is that called kedarko or not? So you should just, you know, we call it don't fetishkach. You know, it's remember it and then forget it. I mean, you don't have to confuse yourself, but there's a long discussion about that case of hemcheu b'chama, whether that's considered chelev chai, and if he drinks it, whether he's chayev or he's pot. Now here I have a very important piece. This you have to all listen carefully. Are we all listening carefully?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kosav Rav Mordechai. When Rabbi Yochanan uses the word patur, correct? And Rav Simi Barashi used the word patur, so underline that word patur, says the Mordechai, lav dafka. Don't take this literally. Ella, instead, take out the word potter and substitute the word mutter. And the Mordechai says that the reason why he doesn't want you to get confused here is because the word potter in Masechta Shabbos always means potter avalasar. Here in Masechta Psachim Adaf Chav Dalet, potter means potter mutter. And this is fascinating because what this means is that there's not even an Isur Derabbanan in the case of Achilas Shelo Kedarko according to the Mordechai. Again, we're going to go on and see other Rishonim, but right now the Mordechai, it's almost Rosh Chodesh Adar Beis, right? The real Adar, so we want to mention the Mordechai, right? And the Mordechai says that the word Potter here means Mutter. And the Rabbanan did not institute any sort of enactments to prohibit you, as opposed to Shabbos. Throughout Masechta Shabbos, one of the longest Masechtas in Shas, the word potter appears thousands of times. And every time you see the word potter, it means potter aval asur. On a Doraisa level, the Torah doesn't consider it a violation of Shabbos, but the Rabbanan asked it. So, for example, getting back to Don's question from before, on Shabbos, if you would do something with a shinui, that would be asur. Min Rabbanan. We're afraid that tomorrow you're going to do it the normal way, or next Shabbos you'll do it the normal way. But in the case of Shalom Kederach Achilasan, the Mordechai insists that Potter here means Mutter. Potter u Mutter. Shalom Kemo Dini Shabbos. Shekol Mokum Shenemar Potter HaKavanoshi L'Chatchila Osu. He says the following. Tosvis disagrees with the Mordechai. Now this Tosis is not here on our page. It's in Masechta Shavuos. And there he says that min rabbanan asru achila shelo kedarko. That the word potter it means exactly what it means in Masechta Shabbos. Potter aval asru. This is Tosot in Masechta Shavuos. So we have Machlokesim Jin Tosot in the Mordechai. And the super commentaries on the Rambam, I can give you a whole list of them, the Magid Mishnah, the Lecha Mishnah, the Mishnah Melech, they all assume that according to the Rambam Shita, Potter means Potter mi Malkus, Amal Asur min HaTorah. We have three different approaches, min HaKotza el HaKotza. According to the Rambam Shita, the way the commentaries explain the Rambam, in a case of Shalom Kiderach Achilas, and you violate an Issa Doraisa, we only alleviate you from Malkus. On the other polar extreme, we have the Mordechai who says that in the case of Shalom Kiderach Achilas, and his Mutal Chatkil, his knife, and an Issa Dorabana. And in the middle, we have the compromise Shita of the Tosus, that Shalom Kiderach Achilas is Mutter min Torah, but also min Rabbanah. Just like in Shabbos, the word potter should be interpreted the same way. Pretty amazing machlokis, no? Okay. Now, my question to you is the following. When Rav Simi Barashi gives us the case of Achal Chelev Chai, is he adding anything to Rav Yochanan? Or is he just, as we said before, clarifying? Give me a case, you know, you just, I need a practical example of Shalom Kiderach Achilasan, and he comes up with Chelev Chai. So here we have a Chiddush of the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissen. He writes the following. B'divrei Rav Simi yesh tosefes b'havanas divrei Rav Yochan. Rav Simi is adding a new understanding of Rav Yochan that we didn't have. Shelo rak ba'achilas dover she'ein derech lechol mimenu potur ela af ba'achilas dover she'derech li'ochlo kigon chelev she'derech li'ochlo yidei bishol vi'ochlo chai harezu gamkein achilas shelo kedark. I'm sure everybody caught that, so you don't need me to explain it, but just in case there's anyone here who didn't catch that, and this is the Ran, I want to share the Ran with you. The Ran is telling us that Rav Simi jumped a step and he added something very important here that we wouldn't have known from Rav Yochanan. In other words, there are two cases. There's category one, and that we would have known from Rav Yochanan, and then Rav Simi took it a step further and he expanded it to category number two. Category number one is something that's not eaten. You don't usually eat it. Okay? And category number two is you usually eat it, but you change the form in which you eat it. Okay, let's go over the two categories. Category number one would be the following. Let's say you had a fruit, and the juices of the fruit started oozing out. Right? Oozing out. Let's see, in the language he says zavu. I don't know if this is a good example, but how many of you eat pomegranates? Yeah? Have you ever noticed that if you take out the pomegranates from your receptacle, there's still like juice there?
Never paid attention.
Never paid attention, but next time take a look, you'll see this juice. Now, normally when you eat a pomegranate, you eat the fruit itself. The juice is not eaten. Again, you can squeeze out pomegranate juice, but that's a whole different discussion we're going to get to later on. But generally speaking, you have to grant me this, and if it's not a pomegranate, you'll fill in a different fruit, whatever your fruit of your choice is. You eat the fruit and not its juice. Again, today...
You drink pomegranate juice?
Okay, so Don, today we live in a different society. Today they eat pear juice.
That's true.
You can basically take almost any fruit. I don't know if they got, you know, there's something called a passion fruit. I don't know if they got to the point where they squeeze that and make a juice out of it. Anything, any fruit you can make a juice out of. But at the time of Chazal, there were certain very specific fruits, limited number of fruits that you'd squeeze and crush and remove their juice. For example, anavim. Right, what do we get from grapes?
Grape juice.
Grape juice. Wine. So that's considered an ochel that's eaten b'derech shtia. You know, so you drink a solid food because you turn the solid food into a liquid, you remove its juices. Or, for example, a zayis. Again, there's a whole issue about whether you drink olive oil or not. That's a different thing. But certainly you use olive oil as it's an edible thing. So to take an olive, crush the olive, and extract its oil, that's a nechal. But let's say in a pomegranate, normally you eat the pomegranate. Normally you eat a strawberry. Again, today you can go to the fanciest stores and you get strawberry juice. I remember I was in South Africa once, in a place called Cape Town. And there was a kosher place that served strawberry juice. I mean, people were waiting online, you know, and it was dirt cheap because they charge in rands over there. The rand is worthless. Anyway, so we were drinking strawberry juice, Yom HaLaila, you know. But normally, you eat a strawberry, maybe you cut it up, you put it into yogurt, but, you know what I'm saying? So this man, right? Okay, so everything that we're discussing will be relevant, as Rumi pointed out before, to brachas. But my point is that when you look at a strawberry, from the Gemara's perspective at least, again, things may have changed in our society, what you're looking at is something that's eaten as a strawberry. You don't drink strawberries. But if the juice from the strawberry comes out and you went ahead and drank the strawberries, that's considered shelo kederach achilason. Why? Because that's not... The ochel, the chefetz itself, is not omeid l'shtia. It's omeid l'achila. Okay. Again, it's a complicated concept, but keep it in mind. As we go through the sugya, it's a very interesting introduction to the sugya. The Ran comes along and says, the Rav Simi went a step beyond that. The chalev is eaten, and he's eating the chalev. What's the chiddush of shelo kederach? He's eating it chai. He's not eating it the normal way that you cook it and then you eat it. So in the first case, you're talking about something, you look at the juice of a pomegranate. Again, don't talk to me about today, but I'm just saying, back in the time of the Gemara, the juice of a pomegranate was never eaten. They didn't market pomegranate juice or strawberry juice. You know, there were strawberries and pomegranates. So now you took a food, you converted it into a liquid, and you drank it instead of eating it. That's shalom kederach hana'asa. That's shalom kederach achilasa. That's not achil, that's shasiya. You took a solid and made it into a liquid. Comes along Rav Simon, he goes a step further. Even if it was what it is, and you ate it exactly as it is, and that's how it's eaten, but you changed the normal way that you would eat it. Instead of eating it raw, instead of eating it cooked, you ate it raw. Done.
Okay, with that in mind, we're now sitting today, and I come to you with a question.
Right.
You know, I'm going to squeeze my pomegranate and eat the juice. You know, and so the question is, does it come under Rule 1 or Rule 2?
Right, right. The truth is that it might be dependent upon time and space. Meaning, if in our time we drink pomegranate juice, and people are marketing pomegranate juice and strawberry juice, like I told you in South Africa when I was there, that would probably change things. Now, there's another factor here that might kick in, and that is, when they planted it, what did they have in mind? In other words, let's say, for example, I own Tropicana orange juice. Halavai, in my dreams, right? Is it still around, Tropicana? I assume it's still.
I don't know.
Now, when I plant oranges, I plant oranges for the purpose of juice.
That changes the whole thing. In other words, it's his intent, not my intent.
That's right? That's what I'm thinking. That it could be, again, you know, there are many variables in this sugi, but one of the variables might be, when you produce this ochel, did you produce it for the sake of shtia or for the sake of achila? You produced it, in this case, you planted the tree, the grove, for the sake of selling oranges, right? You buy Jaffa oranges. Mm-hmm. Or no. You're in the business of making orange juice. So I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you know it a lot better than me. I'm saying something stupid when I say I don't know if you know this. For sure you know this. There's something called juice oranges, and they look different than other oranges. Mm-hmm. And again, you can eat them, but it's made for juice purposes. It's really full of juice.
Yeah, that tastes
good. So it could be that the halacha might change, meaning, what would be shelo kederach achilason in orange juice? It would be if you took a Jaffa orange, you know, one of those fat, juicy, you know, I shouldn't say juicy because now I want to say it's not juicy, but it's full of pulp, it's full of basar, of the fruit, and instead of eating it as such, you squeeze it and you drink its juice. Maybe that would be shelo kederach achilason, but if you had a juice orange that was manufactured and produced for the sake of juice, maybe that would change. That would be like zeisim v'anovim in the case of grapes and olives. Yeah.
This whole discussion, though, is about food that are prohibited for us to eat. Which I imagine would be more than their own basar, meat, fish, fowl.
So we're going to talk about arla, for example. Let's say I have oranges that are arla in the first 3 years. So what happens if I drink the juice of arla instead of eating the fruit itself? If I eat the fruit itself, that's called kederach achilos, and I get malchus for that. Arla is even worse than that. Arla is also ba'anah, if you remember our discussion. But let's say, for example, instead of eating the fruits of arla, I squeeze the juice out of the fruits, and I'm not talking about zeisim v'anavim, and I drink the juice. That would be shelo kederach achilos. And now Rav Simi is breaking down the boundaries. He's expanding the borders here. Even if the ochel itself is being eaten in its original form and it's designated for eating, again, you and I wouldn't eat chaylev, but a guy would eat chaylev. Nevertheless, if he didn't eat it in the same tzura that you normally eat it, namely tzuras bishul, and instead he ate it chay, that's also called shalokederech achilos. Now, what would be the din? And that we said there are three possibilities. There's the shita of Mordechai, it's mutul chatchila. There's the shita of the Rambam, according to the Mefarshei Rambam, that you're violating an Issa Doraisa, but without Malkus. And then there's the middle of the road shita of Tosus, that you violated an Issa Drabon. Okay, so that's the Ran. Ika diamri. Now this Ika diamri is another version of the statement of Rabbi Yochanan. It's a different tradition as to what Rabbi Yochanan said. And generally speaking, and I'm going to see if I can apply the general rule here, when you have an Ika diamri, it's an argument la halacha, it's a machlokas la halacha with the first version. Do you follow what I'm saying? That in the Ika Diyamri, we're going to have to figure out if there is a machlokas here between this Ika Diyamri and the first Lishna, and what is that machlokas? Do you follow my point? If you have a flowchart, you have Rabbi Yochanan on top, and then you have a split, two different versions of Rabbi Yochanan. And here we're up to the second version of Rabbi Yochanan. According to the second tradition, Omer Rav Abba, Omer Rav Yavo, Omer Rav Yochanan, Kol Yisurin Shabbat Torah, Ein Lokin Alehen El Kederach Hana'asan. You only violate the Torah law if you enjoy the benefit of this Isur Hana'ah, the normal way you benefit Hana'ah. So on both sides.
How's that different?
How's that different? So again, I'm giving you a preview of coming attractions here. We're going to have a lot to talk about here, but let's just say, let's just sort of shoot from the hip. What it means is that the first version of Rabbi Avo in the name of Rabbi Yochanan would not go as far as to say that in Isuri Hanah there's something called Shalo Kederach Hana'asam. Hana'ah is all inclusive. The way you benefit from it is different from the way I benefit, and the way Phil benefits, or Jerry or Ruven. Everyone has their own way of benefiting from something.
Okay.
And there's no such standard objective derech hanah. Comes along the second Lishna, the Yikadiyami says, no. To the same extent that there are standards, objective standards for what's considered kederech achila, there are objective standards for what's considered kederach hanah. Lemutei mai, what is this coming to exclude? Omer Rav Simi Bar Ashi, lemutei sheminiach chelev shel sharniska al gabi makoso shu potur. We're not talking about eating chelev. We're talking about using chelev for its medicinal purposes. And he placed it as a, I don't know how to pronounce this word, sav. How do you pronounce that? S-A-U-V-E, I think.
A salve.
He used it as a salve for his injury. Okay? Well, what example can I give? Like today we have something like Vaseline. What's it called? What's that famous Vaseline that we used to use?
The brand name is Vaseline.
Oh, Vaseline is a brand name. I thought Vaseline was
petroleum jellies.
This chalev, now he's using, instead of eating it, he's using it as petroleum jelly. Now you have to keep in mind the following. Number one, shar haniskal is aser b'hanah. You may recall we had a pasuk for that, Ubal Ashar Noki. I'm not going to go over this now. So you're not allowed to benefit from Ashar Niskal in any way. Point number two, the Chelev of Ashar Niskal is also Asur Bahanoah. When the Torah prohibited Hanoah in the carcass of this animal that was stoned, then it includes even the Chelev as well. Point number three, you're not allowed to eat the Chelev. And point number four, you're not allowed to benefit from the Chelev. But what is the normal way of benefiting from chalev? If I had a chalev store, who would come to my chalev store? Who would be my clients to buy my chalev?
Non-Jews.
Okay, that could be. But I meant something else. What profession would they belong to? It starts with a T.
Tanners,
exactly. The normal benefit that you get from chalev, if you don't eat the chalev, is to use it for tanning, not to put it on the human body. As a, for its medicinal petroleum jelly content. Comes along the Ika D'Amri in the second Lishna of Rabbi Yochanan and says that just like there's a requirement of a standard objective derech achila, so too when the Torah prohibits Hanah, there's a standard objective Hanah. And the objective Hanah of Chelev is Meshicha al Gabi Oros. Now he uses this chalev and he benefits for on a medicinal level. It's shalom kederach hanoah, and it's not prohibited. The first listener of Yochanan said, "Where is there a din of shalom kederach? Only with regard to what achila? But this, but as far as hanoah is concerned, you know, you want to benefit from this from this chalev. What do you want to use it for? Okay, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, they say we use it for tanning our skins, our hides. But I need it for medicinal purposes. Did I benefit from it? Nobody denies that I benefited from it. Do you follow my point? So the first listener would say yechayev. The Torah does not set objective standards for hanoah. Whatever benefit you enjoy, you benefited from. Again, if you didn't benefit from it, that's something different. You know, let's say you did something crazy and instead of benefiting, you got sick from it. That's a mazik. That's a harmful damage. But that's not what we're talking about. He used it as petroleum jelly. He didn't have petroleum jelly in his closet, his medicine closet. So he got a hold of chalev of shar niskal. You know, he waited online for the shar to be stoned. Then he dug into the shar and took out the chalev and he used it as a retio. It's called on his wound, on his makor. Did he benefit from it? No question about it. Less mind the polling. Clear as day that he benefited from it. Did he benefit from the way that this chalev would normally be designated for? No, if you ask me the designation, the market designation of this chalev, it's for tanners. Limshof bohen zechoros. So the first listener would say, well, there's halach of shalom kedarko in achila. The Torah has an objective standard of what constitutes achila. Many dinim and conditions that have to be met to qualify as achila. But hanoah is subjective. And if you got benefit from it, you violated the Isra Noah, you're going to get Malchus for that. The second Lishna says no. To the same extent that the Torah has objective standards of what's Ragil in Achila, there's also an objective standard in Hanoah as well. An amazing fundamental machlokus in between two Lishonos, two transmissions of Rabbi Yochanan. What exactly did Rabbi Yochanan say? Now here I have to share a very important footnote with you, because it's going to come up over and over again throughout this sugya. If a person violates macholas asuras and he eats whatever he eats, let's say nevela and treifa and basav cholov or arla, whatever he eats, what punishment does he get if it was kedarka?
Lashes,
right? Balkis. What about a person who benefits from Isurei Hanoah? He benefits from Sharaniskal, from Orla, from Chametz. He doesn't eat it. He benefits from it. He feeds his dog. He sells it to a guy. He uses it. If he uses it as a thing, according to the first Lishna, at least, right? Does he get Malkis? So here we have a machlokes between the Mishnah Lamelech and the Magid Mishnah. These were two super commentaries on the Rambam. The Rambam says the following: I'm saying according to the Magid Mishnah, the Rambam says the following: Ein lokin al hana mi macho elagak al achiloso. So, for example, if I would take chalev of shara niskal and I would use it to smoothen out my hides, right? Then I would not get malchus for that. Why? Because I didn't eat it. I only got hana from it. That's the opinion of the Magid Mishnah. Now we get to the Mishnah Lamelech.
Which was the second one?
The second one is the Mishnah Lamelech. Okay, now just give me a second to clear my brain here. Oh. The Mishnah Lamelech says the following. If you read the Gemara carefully, the Gemara says, you know why you're potur and you don't get malchus is because you use the chalev of shar niskal for medicinal purposes. The clear-cut implication would have been that if you would have used it in the normal way, limshach bo'as ha'oros, for the tanners, then you would get malchus. How could the Magid Mishnah claim that you don't get malchus when you use chalev of Isuri Anah in its normal way, that people benefit from, like I say, the way they market it in the stores, when the Gemara says that the reason why you don't get malchus is because people don't use chalev normally as a refuah on top of their injury? They normally use it either to eat it, or as, you know, as fuel to light a fire, or to limshok ba'enesa oros. However, there might be a totally different reason why you don't get malchus for hana. You only get malchus for something that is mefurash ba'torah. It's explicit in the Torah that it's asur. Isur hana is derived from a alfusa. It's not explicit in the Torah. Like, for example, in the case of shor niskal, it's also hana because it says ubal ashor noki. In the case of chametz, according to Chizkiah, it's because it says lo ye ochel. But when the Torah says lo ye ochel, if you look in the English translation, it doesn't say that you're not allowed to benefit from chametz. That's not the English translation when you translate the pasuk literally. But Chazal say that, why didn't the Torah say lo yochel? Instead it says lo ye ochel. Or, for example, in Rabbi Avoh's frame of reference, since the Torah was mater hana in the case in the Vela, therefore we assume that in other cases it's asur b'hana, until you know. But the Torah never says it's asur b'hana. The Torah only says lo sochlu, don't eat it. And we have a rule that you don't get malchus unless something is explicit in the Torah. And isur hana is not explicit in the Torah, hence you don't get malchus. So it seems that there are different approaches as to the status of malchus vis-a-vis someone who violates the Isra Hanah. The simple pshat in the Gemara seems to indicate you would get malchus if you had Hanah Kedarka, if you used the Chalev of Shor Niska in the normal way. But the Mepharshim say that there are other reasons why you don't get malchus. One is because the Hanah is kind of secondary. The real Hanah is Achila, and you didn't eat it. The others say because it's not explicit in the Torah, it's derived from the Alfusa, Jerry.
Correctly, the Lashon Gedi is written three times.
So
we learned from that. One of the things we learned is
Hanah.
Right. So you would have.
The Gemara is going to have a different derivation, but yeah, go ahead.
You would have Malchus
or not? So we're saying
it's
that
not
since.
But
since it's not explicit in the pasuk, you know, it says Lo Savashil, and we're going to derive the Iser Achil, the Iser Hanah, from a derivation.
So you shouldn't
get Malchus for it. Okay, so keep that in mind and write it down on your list, because we're about to get, I don't know if we'll get to today, what time is it now? Okay, we might be pressed for time, but tomorrow, which means Sunday, we'll get to Basar Mechol, the Mirza Hashem. Okay, So now let me quote to you Rabbeinu David. Rabbeinu David was a Talmud of the Ramban. And he says the following. There's a machlokas between the two Lashonos of Rabbi Yochanan. According to the first Lashon, Dafka Achila Shalom Kederach Ein Shema Achila. Aval Hanah Afil Shalom Kederach Liolam Hanahi. If he gets benefited from it, what difference does it make what way he gets benefit? Lefichach, Lelishna Rishona, according to the first Lishna Rabbi Yochanan, Be Isuri Hanah Chayav, Al Hanah Shalom Kedarka. Mashenki Lefi Lishna Basra, Gam Al Hanah Shalom Kedarka Yesh Ptur. Kema De, I'm sorry, Shekain Be Isuri Hanah. He has here a note here, Berov Isuri Hanah Kagon Chavis Pesachar Nitzkal, Bederchal Nemer Isa Betor Beloshan Achila, Vekain Shenever Beloshan Achila, is Huksha Hanah Achila. Hanah has the same status as Achila, and therefore, just like Achila has to be Kedarka, so too Hanah has to be Kedarka. V'yei Lokin Olea Ela Kedarka. And again, there seems to be a possibility here, which I don't know, I have to check this out, that maybe you would get Malkus for Hanah. But again, as I said before, the Magid Mishnah says you don't get Malkus because the Ikar Hanah is Achila, this is a Tofel, and because Hanah is derived from a Yalfusa and it's not explicit in the Torah. Okay. Itmar Nami. The Gemara now brings another Amora who quotes Rabbi Yochanan in this context. Omer Av Acha Bar Avya, Omer Av Asi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Hiniach Chelev Shel Shor Niskal Gavi Makosov Potur, Lefisha Kol Yisur Batorei Lokin Alei Mele Derech Hanoso. So this tradition mimics the Lishna Basra, the second Lashon. Omer Av Zera, Afanan Namit Nina. This is interesting. I have a Mishnah, and I'm going to prove Rabbi Yochanan from the Mishnah. The Mishnah is in Masechta Trumos. And we're talking about Orla. A lot of the laws of Orla were placed by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in Masechta Trumos. You have to know why, but anyway, Orla. And the question is, do you violate the Iser Orla and get Malkus if you drink the liquids of a juice, what we discussed before? And the Braisa, I'm sorry, the Mishnah says the following, Ein Sofkin es Arboim, you don't get Malkus, Mishum Arla, for drinking the liquids of fruits of Arla, the first 3 years since it's planted, Ela al Hayotzim and Azesim and Anovim Bilvad. Only on the juices of Zesim, which is called Shemen, oil, or the juices of grapes, which is called wine. But the Ilu, however, Mitusim Te'enim V'rimonim, if he takes pomegranates, or dates, or, I'm sorry, if he takes strawberries, or dates, or pomegranates of Orla, he doesn't get Malkus. If he drinks the mashke, if he drinks the liquids. Now in the case of Te'enim, I don't know, even in contemporary life, I don't know if this is there such a thing as date juice. I'm sure there is somewhere in the face of the earth. But anyway, dates are kind of, more like a solid kind of thing. I don't know how much. Anyway, he somehow was able to squeeze out a couple of drops from his dates, you know.
You can make date honey.
In any event, he drank the juices of Arla, of an Arla fruit. And the Mishnah says that he's absolved from Malkus. Says Rabbi Zeira, why? My timer. The answer is, Lav, is it not because, he asks a rhetorical question, Mishum deloka achalu kederach hanasam, this is not the normal way you benefit from tusim te'enim v'rimonim. The normal way is to eat them. And now you squeeze out the juices and you drink the juices? That's not the way you eat fruits. Hence, you're potter from Arla. Why? Because that Hanah is not the normal Hanah, and that therefore proves Rabbi Yochanan. Abaye says, no, you have no proof for the Mishnah. Bishleima iashme'inam pri gufa deloka achale derech Hanah sa shapir. You would have a proof for Rabbi Yochanan if the Mishnah would have spoken about the pre gufa, meaning the fruit itself. Let's say you ate the fruit in an unusual way. For example, maybe you cooked it instead of eating it raw, or in certain cases, you, right, let's say, here's an example. He brings here the note, based on Rashi, egozim o afarsikim. Okay, these are walnuts and peaches. No, the normal way of eating it is raw. He went ahead and he cooked it. Again, today maybe we eat cooked peaches, but I don't know if anybody cooks walnuts, maybe. But he cooked a walnut. Walnuts are also mishum arla the first 3 years, and he cooked the arla, he cooked the yafarsikim, or the agozim, and he ate it cooked. And if he'd be potter, that would express the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, that instead of eating the chelev chai, he ate it, instead of eating it mevushal, he ate it chai, instead of eating chai in the case of agozim shel arla, he ate it cooked, and therefore he's potter. Aval hacha, but here in the case where he didn't eat the agozim or the fruit itself, but rather what he squeezed out the juice, is then there's another issue entirely. That's called mishum dezea bi'almahu. Mishum dezea bi'almahu. Okay. So let's talk a little about Zeha B'Alma. It's a major sugya in Masechta Brachos and all over Shas. Zeha B'Alma, you may notice that on some fruits, there's a certain liquid on the outside of the fruit. There's a certain moisture, I would say. And the Gemara calls it Zeha. It's almost as if the fruit sweats. And the mashke, the liquid, the juice inside the fruit, insofar as you normally eat the fruit by eating its basar, it's the meat of the fruit, so to speak, the juice is considered zeah bi'alma. This has nothing to do with derech achilasan or ain derech achilasan. The Torah prohibits fruit. The Torah never prohibited the juice of the fruit, with the exception of two cases, and that's zeisim v'anavim. All other fruits, the Torah prohibited the fruit itself, but the Torah never included in the definition of a fruit, meaning a shame pri, zeh bi'alma, the mashke. Mashkin ha-yotzim and ha-peros lav kimosam. Any liquids that come out of fruits do not have the same status as the liquid. Again, what would be if you planted it for the purpose of liquids, like I told you about before, of juice oranges, that might be different. But in your classic orange, which was planted and is designated and marketed for eating the fruit itself, the juice itself is not called a pri. It's not called a pri. And therefore, this has nothing to do with kederach hanosim or shalom kederach hanosim. The reason why you're not chayim is because you didn't eat the pri. And the Torah prohibited pri of arla and nothing but the pri. Now again, we're going to get back to the other question. What happens if you drink the juice of two simtanim v'rimonim of arla? Are you in violation? And again, it could break down into three possibilities. I don't know if you're in violation of a drabanan, are you in violation of a doraisa, or there's no violation whatsoever. The impression you get over here, before you see the Rambam, is that there's no violation whatsoever. It's not pri. The mitz, the juice of the mashke, the fruit, is not considered the fruit itself. On the other hand, if you take the juice out of zeisim v'anavim, of arla, and you drink that juice, you get malchus. So drinking wine of arla or oil of arla would precipitate malchus. And therefore, in the case of mashkin ayotzim and zeisim v'anavim, dinam kipri atzmo. The oil has the same din as the zayis, and the wine has the same din as the anavim. And all this is derived in the Gemara in Chulin on Daf Kufcha from Beis, from various drashos that put shemen and yayin on a special level. But as far as all other fruits are concerned, the juices are considered zeah bi'alma. And zeh bi'alma means it's not part of the fruit itself. It doesn't have a shame pri. Omar Abaye, hakol modim beklaya kerem shalokim aleihem afilu shalokim derech hanasam. We had a discussion between the two Lashonos of Rabbi Yochanan. What's the deal in Isurei Hanah? Like, for example, Chelev of Shar Niskal, if you benefit from the chelev by putting it on your as for medicinal purposes, if it's shalom kider chanosam, but I call modim, says Abaye, that there's one iser in the Torah which is asur banah, and a man is not whether you do it kider chanosam or shalom kider chanosam, and that's klayakerim. Klayakerim means that you mixed two seeds. One seed was, let's say, a barley seed or a wheat seed, and the other was a vine, right? A grapevine. I'm just giving you one example of kelayim. And in such a case, when you plant them together and they grow, that which grows is called klaya kerem. In Hebrew, it's called smachim misugim shonim shetzomchu samuch legefen. Various kinds of growths or vegetations that were planted next to a vine. And osam smachim are considered klaya kerem. And klai kerem is asur b'hanah. Now klai kerem is asur b'hanah, but here it's a big chumrah. It's asur b'hanah even shalom keder chanaasam, and that's true even according to the first listener of Yochanan. Hakol modin, nobody demise it, says Abai. Why? Because again, the only reason that we would even according to the Lishna Basra. What did I say? The Lishna Kama. I'm sorry, I correct myself. Even the Lishna Basra, says Abaye, that claimed that if you use Chelev of Isurei Hanah as a Reti on a Makkah, as a Refuah, you don't get Malkus, but here in the case of Klai Kerem, you'd get Malkus. Why, my timer? Mishum de lok siv behu achila. The only reason why we apply the rule of shalok kederach hanaasam is because the Torah says achila, and the Torah, when it says achila, includes hana as well. So the same standards and requirements of achila, meaning kedarko, apply to hana. But if the Torah never called it achila, then we have no reason to derive the conclusion that hana requires kedarko. And if for you it's hana, then it's Hanah, and you violate Klai HaKerem. What is the source for Hanah in Klai HaKerem? So this is a parasha in Kitetze. It says, Lo tizra karmacha kelayim, pen tigdash hamalea, hazera shatizra utfuas hakorem. And the word tigdash, Rashi says, is no trikun. No trikun means it's made up of different words that are combined into one word. And the word tigdash, where it says tigdash hamalea, is no trikun for tukat esh, which means we have to take this kelayim and we have to burn it. Klomar, what does that mean? You have to burn it. Shalotena min hakelayim, don't have any benefit from the kelayim, just burn it. When the Torah says achila, like for example in chametz, where does the Torah indicate that chametz is also banah? It says lo teochel. So the Torah says don't eat it, and eating includes hanah. So then, to the same extent that eating has to be kiderach achila, so the normal way of eating, so too hanah has to be the normal way of hanah. But when the Torah doesn't use the lashon achila, for example in Klai HaKerem, when the Torah says pentikdash hamalea, is then any hanah whatsoever would be a violation, even if it's shalom kedarka. We no longer equate hanah with achila, and you're chayev even shalom kedarka. Wow, that's a big chiddush. So let's say I would take Klai HaKerem and I would use it for medicinal purposes to cover a makkah. I would be chayev for that, even though that's not the normal way you benefit from Klai HaKerem. So he says the following. He says, Gam lo lishna basra shehanah meisuri hanah shalom kederach hanasam potur b'Klai HaKerem modeh shu chayav. Now, we mentioned before that there are a whole bunch of Rishonim who say that you don't get Malkus for violating Isur Hanah, either because it's not Achila, which is the primary method of Hanah, the prime method, or because it's not explicit in the Torah. But here, take a look at the Gemara. Omer Abaye, Hakol Modim Eklai Akerim, Shalokin Aleihem, Afil Shalokin Erech Hanosim. He says explicitly you get Malkus for it. So how could the Rishonim and the Achronim say that you don't get Malkus for Hanah? He's talking about Hanah from Klai Akerim and he gets Malkus. And it's explicit in the Torah. And it's explicit in the Gemara. So he quotes here a sefer I'm not familiar with, it called the Pre-Tar. Hatam Shein Lokin Ali Suri Anahu Mipnesha Derech Li Ochlon Velo Lehenos Mihen. So the reason why you don't get Malkus Fana is because it's something that is up front, at least, is designated for Achila, not for Hana. Is there for Hanah liolam chashuva shalom kedarka? Hold up, pshat. Why do you don't get malchus for Hanah? It's because it's always considered shalom kedarka. The kederach is achil. Amna meklaya keren kevet shechayev al achila shalom kedarka. The Gemara says that since it doesn't say achila, therefore you chayev even shalom kedarka is memela by Hanah chayev. I feel he shalom kedarka. No, it's Hanah is no worse than Achila shalom kedarka. And in the case of Klai Akerim, you get Malkus for Achila shalom kedarka. If so, factor you get Malkus for Hanah. But Ladas Hamishna Lamelech Shein Lokin Al Isuri Hanah Kevan Shein Isura Mefurish BeTorah. But according to Mishna Lamelech, the reason why you don't get Malkus in Isura Hanah is because the Torah never explicitly mentioned the Isura Hanah. It's only Yalfusa. In other words, although in general you don't get Malkus according to the Mishnah Melech for Yisuri Anoah, for violating Yisuri Anoah, because it's not explicit in the Torah, here in the case of Klai Akerim, the Yisuri Anoah is explicit in the Torah. And why is it explicit in the Torah? Because we all know the nutrikin of Tugdash, and Tugdash means Tukad Ba'esh. And since the Torah says you have to burn Kelaya Kerem, obviously you're not allowed to have Hanoah from it. That's considered Mefurish B'Torah. And therefore you get Malkus. So again, if I would quiz you, do you get Malkus for violating Yisuri Hanoah? Your answer would be no, but if I ask you when is the exception to the rule, you'd have to tell me Kelaya Kerem. Then if I ask you why Klai Akerim is the exception, here's where you're going to fail. No, I'm just kidding. No, because this is much more complicated. So why do you not get Malkus for Yisuri Hanoah in general, says the Mishnah Lamech, because it's not explicit in the Torah. In the case of Klai Akerim, it's explicit in the Torah, and therefore you get Malkus. If you hold that the reason why, this was the Magid Mishnah, the reason why you don't get Malkus for Yisuri Hanoah because Yisuri Hanoah is sort of secondary to Achila, that's only where the Torah says don't eat, and then the Hanah is an extension of Achila, but the Hanah is secondary to Achila. But in the case of Klai Akerim, the Torah never said don't eat Klai Akerim, we only learn it from Pen Tikta Shamaleh, which means you're not allowed to benefit at all, you have to burn it. In such a case, you get Malkus for violating Yisuri Hanah. So let's see where we're up to. We're up to Meisvei Isi Ben Yehuda Omer. You have that? So we're on Daf Chav Dalet Amud Beis. We're almost at the bottom of the Amud, and that's about, I'd say, 8 lines down. So Mitzvah Hashem, B'li Neder, on Sunday, when the sun shines, I don't know, we'll be back. Oh yeah? Okay. Lately it's been, you know, like bad weather, and then we get some good weather. And we'll get back together. I want to thank everyone for joining me and all the shiurim of the week and so forth and so on. If anyone's interested in learning Mishnah Berurah, just let me know. Okay then? Yeah. Shkara. Eish?
Tukad Eish.
What do you say? Tukad Eish?
You said.
Oh, it says Pen Tigdash Hamalea. So we take the word Tigdash and we split it into. I don't know. Very difficult. But look, if the Nutrikin is used to interpret the pasuk, what does it mean, Tukdash Hamaleah? We don't know what that means. So if we interpret it as Tukdash meaning to burn it, then it's pretty much mefurish. But you're right, the question is better than this.